My name is Lisa Crowley, and I'm the chair for the Mount Pleasant ATAC committee. And so we're going to go ahead and get started. The first thing I wanted to do was get the minutes approved from our last meeting.
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
A second.
Second.
All righty. Thank you. 2 seconds. Okay. No worries. All righty. And then we can go ahead and start with our.
Excuse me, Chairwoman.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
We have a motion to approve and for all in favor and all opposed.
Okay. We have a motion to approve the minutes as written.
Yes. Motion.
Okay.
Second. So all in favor.
Okay. We're good.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. In favor? Okay. As written. Perfect.
Chairwoman. I'm sorry, Chairwoman. We will need to all oppose for the minutes.
All opposed? Any opposed? No opposed. We're good. Nice drones going on. Okay. All righty. So now we're going to move over to the public comment section. And the first group that we'll hear is Charleston Race Week. Is everyone here with Charleston?
Yeah, the comments are separate.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Let me start public comments. Does anybody have anything they want to say? Sorry. We do this twice a year, so I'm rusty. Sorry about that. Any public comments?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
What
Welcome.
Year is this building built? What is the year?
Ma'am.
The building being built that we're in, the town hall building. What year?
Unfortunately, I do not know that, but John can.
This is a beautiful building, and I wanted to know the year of this building because preservation is a big key around the Low Country, and I'm hoping that this building will still be here. Just asking the date of the building. Thank you.
I unfortunately do not have that information, but we certainly can get that information for you. And we'll need your name and address for the record. I'm sorry if you just want to tell us. Sorry. Sorry to make you get up with the baby.
Linda Sailor Marchant, 410 Bryan Street, Somerville, South Carolina, representing Somerville Juneteenth and the Alston Heritage Foundation. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Okay, now we are ready for Charleston Race Week.
Okay, set the timer.
So I'm Randy Drafts. I'm the executive director of Charleston Race Week. And you might know on your brochures, it's actually got a new name this year. We're going to be going forward now Charleston Race Week at Patriots Point. We have partnered with Patriots Point as of this past Friday. And I'm incredibly excited. I've been doing this a long time. And Race Week has is an incredible heritage of evolving through its years. And we're now going into our 28th year. And you know, I have to kind of pinch myself every once in a while to understand how important our event is to the sailing community and to the sport of sailing internationally. It's really grown into where I go pretty much anywhere and they're going to comment about Race Week and the quality. And we continue to kind of set the bar for other events that we're always being compared to. And I think that, you know, this is just another huge step towards us just raising that bar for the event and for the sport. We don't know what all the impacts are yet, you know, but I'm hoping that what we're looking at is probably some increased sponsorship. I did put some extra money into our sponsorship budget this year. We've been missing a title sponsor for the last 3 years. And the other big goal we have in front of us is 2020, you know, it was our 25th anniversary. We had 330 boats registered to attend. Post pandemic, we're averaging around 200. And so our goal right now is to get us back into that 250 boat, 270 boat. I guess my goal of 300 boats is maybe a little bit too deep right now. But how we have to do that is logistics. And again, this partnership is huge for us, because what we're literally having to do here to grow this event back to its original numbers is provide dockage, provide launching and hauling. Our logistics of being able to manage this number of boats is our Achilles heel. You know, we've got to make it easier for these people to attend. As you see, 85% of our attendees are from out of other states, other countries. So it's incredibly important that we get these logistics improved, and so that we can manage and get our numbers back to where they are, what we built them to. So thank you for expanding this to 5 minutes, by the way. And then I'd like to turn it over to Eric Montero from Patriots Point to talk about what it means to those guys as well. So
for us, we have a long history of sailing. It was a natural fit, and we love the idea of it. We actually approached Randy with the idea of us partnering with him, because there's so much potential for our brand as a world-class destination. He's got great visitors, and there's so much growth potential between his organization and our organization to align on different brand goals and different getting visitors to Mount Pleasant. So that's what we're really excited about. Again, we worked with him a little bit last year, started off, we put together our heads, like, what can we do more with Race Week? It's like, why don't we just be the full sponsors, and we rebranded and make it more of our own with Ride Randy's support, all the great work he's done for all these years. So we are here to help. It's important for Mount Pleasant, it's important for Patriots Point, and we're here to support him any way we can.
I think that's our big news, you know, so it's a lot.
It is.
A lot more than is in that report. But again, yeah, we're looking forward. I can't believe they're asking us back after last year's, but
sailors.
Yeah, exactly. 1,500 people, I think, we put into that Hangar B on Saturday night. You know, it was pretty amazing. So I think that they got a good idea. You know, we were all going into this thing last year not knowing what the expectations would be. And this outcome is a dream come true for yours truly. That's so perfect. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So with 85% of your participants being out of town, is there a way that you promote where they stay? Is there a packet that they're given or a website that they're directed?
The only thing we do is we haven't done blocked rooms, because our previous history, we were partners with the Charleston Harbor Resort and Marina prior to this. And I've got to look at that. But what we do is we post the list of rooms or the hotels and everything that's available, you know, from the ATAX. So that's how we kind of promote where to stay.
And where do you post that?
That's on our website. So we can also do social media posts and things of that nature. We're always doing as well. And then the other, you know, big key back to the logistics of things. Last year, with it being kind of unknown and not being at the Charleston Harbor Resort and Marina, what happened were people, you know, there were people at, say, Harbor and Charleston, you know, the boats got spread out. So hence my challenge right now is to bring the boats back to the aircraft carrier and bring them back into Mount Pleasant so that we utilize, you know, so we don't have them getting dispersed out throughout the area.
Okay. And we do have research that we've done, study that the majority of our guests that are from out of town are staying in Mount Pleasant. They're not staying downtown up in this. So we were surprised and very pleased to see.
Perfect. Thank you so much for the clarification. Unfortunately, time's up.
Yep.
But we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I do want to make a quick point, kind of just off the record. The timing is for the presentation period once questions are asked, and the presentation period's over.
Okay.
Yep, they can go beyond that, just with any questions that are going to be asked. Second point, more of a tech deal. Microphone, depending upon what happens, may run out of battery. So if we do see the microphone stop recording, I can go ahead and swap batteries and wait for that.
Got it. And did, I guess since they've left, it's too late now to ask if you had any more questions. Sorry about that. Anyone else have any questions for them? Because it's such a repeat project for us. Okay. We can go on to the next one. Okay. So we're going to hear from the Charleston Restaurant Foundation.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are y'all?
Good, thank you. Thanks for coming.
Yes. So I'm Jenny Pepler. I'm with the Charleston Restaurant Foundation, and we put on the Low Country Oyster Festival every year at Boone Hall. The next event in 2024 is February 4th, and it's our 40th anniversary. So we're quite excited. Yes. And just a little background on the date that we select for that weekend. Typically, we do it the weekend before the Super Bowl. Great. But like just doing some research, that is a typically lower time for the hotels with their occupancy, and it's running just a little over 50%. So we felt, the board felt that it was a great weekend to continue with our formula just so that we can get the guests in and fill the beds. So on top of also reviewing last year's figures, unfortunately, our hotel room blocks were low. And so that put me a challenge for me to do some homework and to make sure that we can get those numbers up. Because it's a 65-35% of our guests that is coming. So 65% are local and 35% are from out of town, which is great, but we need to figure out where the 35% are staying, because we have great hotel partners. We have the links on the website. What can I do better to get the guests to utilize those hotel room blocks? So I think what we are shooting for, since right now the current traveler post-COVID is booking like a week out. It's not even a month out. They are like on a whim deciding to come to Charleston, which is fine. So we are going to do some promoted social media posts just to highlight the hotel partners. We're also going to, on the ticket entry confirmation page, we're going to include the links for the booking of the hotel partners, just so that there's the convenience, as well as for the 2024 exit survey, we're going to add more detailed questions. Because the 35% of the guests that are staying, they're still staying for 4 days. So that's 3 nights, and we just don't know where they're staying. So we'll make sure that we get more answers to the questions for reporting sake. And with the 2023 event, y'all, it was so positive. It was a great event that we were able to turn around and more than double our contributions to our benefiting charities and education partners, which was huge. It was the best day, and that's the reason why we do what we do. Our board is very supportive. If we have a positive year, we turn around and give thanks to our charities and education partners. So yeah, now we're just gearing up for the 2024 event. Boone Hall is the best host. That couldn't be a better place to have the event, and we're just looking forward to a good year.
Perfect.
And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Brumby.
Is the Charleston Restaurant Association part of Explore Charleston?
It's an auxiliary organization under Explore Charleston, yes. Mm-hmm. It is a separate board, and it's a 501c3.
I was looking at your budget, and I saw how much food you sold. You guys went way above what you thought. That was excellent.
It was a very positive year.
Yeah.
It's packed. It was probably, I've been doing this for many years. I won't say how long, but it was probably the most profitable.
Yeah, because I saw in your survey that people were saying they wanted other foods other than just oysters, but they were buying them.
They were buying them. We did have a challenge getting restaurants to sign up last year, and I think the staffing crisis was to blame or a contributing factor.
Got a question for you.
Yeah.
Indicated in your package that you're receiving some MATAC funding from another entity as well. Is that Charleston County?
Yes,
City?
Sir. Okay. Yeah. Because Boone Hall is unique. So it's technically not in the town of Mount Pleasant, but Long Point is. So Charleston County is Boone Hall, the unincorporated.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. We have little pockets like that.
I have to do two police. I have to do Mount Pleasant for outside the event, Charleston County inside, which is fine.
Makes it fun. Donut hole.
Any questions?
No? Madam Chairwoman, thanks. I have a question.
Yes, sorry.
Mine's a question, probably a statement, and Jennifer, maybe you can help me out with this, but there seems to be maybe the inability always to track what hotel rooms are sold. Could we not, I mean, I book hotels for events and stuff when I go out of town. You know, we get a slight discount possibly, or, you know, $10 off the room or something like that, and then we get a code, you know, for what our team name is. Could we not?
That's what they did this year.
Where everybody's starting to do
well,
that?
Well, she has four hotels on here.
Okay.
And so it appears that they set up four separate blocks and got codes.
And you got the code, so you're able to track it.
They didn't track it in years prior. So.
And I've done it years prior, too. But I think for some reason, the guest is not using the link. I think it's the window closes.
Yeah, so, yeah, the window typically closes 30 days prior to arrival.
I think you lost battery.
We can hear you, though.
Well, what about
moving? Oh, sorry, it has to be recorded, so we have to wait.
Can they just present right there at the end of the table, then?
Yeah,
they just present at the end of the table using that microphone. I guess maybe mine's just an overall suggestion then to everybody. That's a good, and I missed that first group. That's a good way to kind of track this. I mean, you know, get a little discount, but the problem is people book so last minute, and that's where you're finding them. And so, you're putting the links directly.
Yes, sir. And we can also, with the exit survey, when they're there, ask them. So we're going to add more detailed questions to the exit survey. Because maybe it's Airbnb, which we don't want, because we want them to stay in our hotel partners. But at least we'll know an answer. So that, you know, just we know where they're staying instead of it just being magic number. They're here three nights, but we're staying at friends' homes, family homes, just so that we can report better.
And just for clarification, Airbnb does pay accommodations.
No, they do.
Yeah. So, I mean,
we just like our hotel partners that partner with us for the event. Maybe we can get Airbnb, too.
But I mean, I did want everyone to understand that they're not under the radar. They do pay accommodations tax as well. And for the record, we have somebody on the board that has them. Two people, actually.
Would you like to be a partner this year?
Yes, she's quick.
Okay. Any questions? And did you get all that? Were you able to get that? Okay.
Perfect. Sorry.
Jenny, thank you so much. Yeah. So sorry for the mic issue.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
So for the next group that's coming up, if you don't mind, okay, John might have it fixed.
Prepare for the worst, hope for the better.
Okay, and we have our next presenter will be with Charleston Food and Wine. And we do have, just for the record, we do have a packet you've given us.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. My name is Alyssa Smith. I'm the executive director for Charleston Wine and Food. And I'm excited to present to you all. We are gearing up for our 2024 festival programming launch coming up here in October. Our 2024 dates are March 6th through 10. And I have some information to share with you about last year's success. It was our most successful festival to date. We had our highest attendance, which is exciting because we saw a little dip post-COVID. So we had over 38,000 guests. We had an increase in visitors staying in Mount Pleasant, which is also exciting. About 43% of our guests come in from out of town, and we define that as a 50-mile radius around the Tri-County area. 11.7% of those were staying in Mount Pleasant in paid accommodations. And in addition to the paid accommodations that our guests stay in, the festival itself invests in Mount Pleasant hotels through hotel partnerships. And we use it as an opportunity to put in talent that are coming in from out of town, our guest chefs, winemakers, beverage professionals. So in addition to the guests staying here, we brokered 94 rooms ourselves for the hotel partners that we work with. We had six events hosted in Mount Pleasant last year. Two of our most marquee experiences, Shucked, which took place at the Embassy Lawn, the Lawn at Embassy Suites. Sorry, I always mix that one up. And that one is a fan favorite. It typically sells out the day that we launch it. It's a celebration of sustainable seafood. Oysters are the star of that, and it was a perfect location overlooking the harbor and the Ravenel. We also did an event, Almost Amalfi, at that same location, and an event, Island Time, over at Patriots Point Links, which is also a stunning venue and a fan favorite when we have guests coming in from out of town. We did our highest economic impact to date. Over $32 million was generated in the 5 days of the festival. We hosted 115 events last year over the course of those 5 days. And this year, the schedule's not out yet, but y'all get a little sneak peek. We've got about 6 events planned, and we're excited to go back to the lawn at Embassy Suite for some of our marquee experiences. It's such a beautiful venue and a beautiful view. Signature dinners, lunches, and brunches tends to be a favorite too for Mount Pleasant restaurants. And we've got some pretty special stuff planned for those entities. And for guests who are traveling in from out of town, that series of events is one of their favorites to attend because they get to experience a Charleston or Mount Pleasant restaurant in a whole new light because we bring in a guest chef and a winemaker component. So Post House, for instance, this year is doing a bubbly brunch. It's going to be caviar and ham and some really fun stuff that they're doing. And with these events outside of entertaining guests, we use them as media opportunities to highlight these establishments, their chefs, and the unique things that they have to offer. Last year, we had over 11 million media impressions, and we had some of our top hits included Vine Pair, Forbes, Savour, Condé Nast Traveler, and we're looking to continue to court that level of media to highlight the participants that are participating in the festival, many of which have businesses here in Mount Pleasant. Kurt? I don't know if anyone has any questions.
Any questions for Wine and Food?
I've got one. The Charleston Wine and Food Festival is such a large thing. It's a big event on our collective radar. Is there a reason that we can't do more than 6 events in Mount Pleasant, or is there a push to do more? I don't know if there's limitation on venues or what, but I'd love to see more.
Yeah, venues and space is our biggest challenge, not just in Mount Pleasant, but throughout the entire Tri-County. So our organization's mission is low country focused. So we have made a concerted effort to spread out the events all over from Somerville, Onondaga, all the way down to Edisto. The signature lunch, brunch, and dinner series is a great one that I think we can continue to expand within Mount Pleasant, especially as y'all start to open more and more highly sought after restaurants. I know we're excited that Chef Kevin Johnson has something opened up over here now in Mount Pleasant. So that's continuing to expand, but venues is the biggest thing. So if there are recommendations for places, and we're looking at things that can hold 500 to 1,000 people, and that tends to be where we start to get narrowed in what we can do.
So I know you've done the barbecue under the bridge before, which
yes.
was wonderful because you started at the beginning. Did that get outsized?
They were doing a lot of construction over there this year, so I'm excited to see what that looks like. Parking is another issue that we tend to run into, of where to put these people. We've chatted about potentially bringing a shuttle option to Mount Pleasant too, in order to have like a congregated space where people can park and ride to things.
So I loved the Amalfi event. That's a beautiful venue, and you guys did a great job with that. And they have that garage right there.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a close enough proximity to the waterfront park?
They did, and they did charge our guests an inflated rate for parking. So that's something that we're working through to see if we can come up with a better partnership between the two to see, or at least be able to communicate to guests that when they're buying a ticket, they'd have to pay extra for parking.
What is it, $5?
We offset the cost. The organization had to pay them in order to offset the cost for our guests.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. Hopefully it stays a gigantic open space with a view of the harbor. But we shall see about that, I guess.
Madam Chairwoman, may I speak?
Please.
So with the barbecue under the bridge, I think the best contact for that would be to mirror what we do for the Blessing of the Fleet.
Mm-hmm.
We'd probably get a hold of Tracy Richter with that.
Yes.
Who coordinates that, and the park, I think, will be done by next year, which
okay.
adds additional parking as well, the construction going on there. So if that's something of interest, which yes. we would like to bring some tax dollars into Mount Pleasant.
We work closely with both Tracy and Nicole, and yeah. our teams met with them both already for this coming festival. So we're, I mean, that's a stunning part. We always look for the waterfront picturesque views, the guests love, and it really sets the scene when you're eating our phenomenal food and drinking wine.
Yeah, so. We're running a lot of shuttles for that event, Blessing and Fleet, so it's same thing.
Awesome. Thank you. We'll look into that.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions?
Nothing like wine and food to get everyone excited, huh? On a Thursday morning?
I like the bubblies and brunch.
The caviar and yeah. ham? Yeah.
That'd be perfect.
Don't tell anyone yet. It's not live. So oh, secret.
Yeah.
It's
a, yeah. We'll keep it mum. And a good champion. Okay.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day. So our next presenter is with Coastal Cyclists.
Good morning. I'm Bob Marcosello, representing Coastal Cyclists, the local bicycle club in the Lowcountry since 1972. Darren, sitting next to me, is our club president. I'm the ride director for the annual event that we're here to talk about today, which we call Ride the Lowcountry. Our annual event's been put on for over 20 years, and it's typically a one-day event that attracts, in recent years, roughly 500 cyclists. For 2023, we added an option to ask people to stay over and do a cycling tour of downtown Patriots Point, the old village of Mount Pleasant, Sullivan's Island, and Isle of Palms. The folks who did the ride loved what they saw, so we're going to include it again in 24. We believe we can leverage the national prominence of Charleston as a tourist attraction to greatly increase the number of folks who attend our event. The problem is we just have to let folks know we're here. So in 2023, we hired a media specialist to advertise our event through Facebook. The result of that is that we had 220 new riders who had never participated before as a result. So we're pretty pleased with the investment that we made. So we would like to expand on that by increasing the quality of our photography, of the video, and to expand the size of the outreach from Facebook to other media, email lists, print media, get our message out to different demographic groups. So the problem is that our 23 event, for various reasons, lost money. So we really don't have the ability to support that increased advertising. And so that's where we need some help. As a two-day event, folks will obviously be staying in the area. Mount Pleasant Hotels are the obvious location. Our Saturday venue is in Allendaw, and our Sunday starting point for the downtown tour is Mount Pleasant Town Center. So Mount Pleasant Hotels are clearly the obvious choice of where people will stay. Our event only provides lunch on Saturday, so folks who are in the area for the weekend will be certainly using local restaurants and providing some business for them. There are lots of cycling events in the country that draw thousands, even tens of thousands of cyclists. So really big cycling events are really nothing unusual. And ours has the potential to grow substantially. Now, we probably won't be the size of the Bridge Run, at least not in the next few years, but we can certainly grow to be a lot larger than we are now. Our current venue for Saturday is the Allendaw Municipal Park, also home of the Blue Crab Festival. They've greeted us with open arms, and they have the ability to host probably in excess of 1,000 people. So certainly in the near-term years, that's a perfect venue for us to continue to grow our event. Surveys that we've done after each ride show that the attendees overwhelmingly enjoy the ride and feel it's worth the cost of admission. So we're dealing with a well-run event with satisfied customers. That's our history. The organizations that we support, Palmetto Cycling Coalition, and Charleston Moves are themselves benefiting the tourist industry by making the Low Country more bike friendly. And we see even on our weekly scheduled rides, people are in the area because they want to ride their bikes and see the scenery that the Low Country offers. So we're actually a year-round draw. So basically, we're here to ask your help and support in achieving our goal of increasing the attendance of our event in 24. In the following years, with our proven, competent event management, with Charleston's magnetism for tourism, and hopefully with your help, we think we can grow this event to something substantially greater than it is now. So this is really an opportunity for the town of Mount Pleasant to get a great return on their investment by helping us work toward making Ride the Low Country a nationally known must-do cycling event in the years to come. And so we hope you look favorably on our request.
Any questions?
Okay. I've got a question.
Sure.
I'm assuming, and that's always tricky, isn't it? That most of your cycling and routes are all for road bikes. Do you have a flair for the off-road or some hybrid type that maybe takes advantage of the Palmetto Trail or beach rides or something other than that might be a way to expand your...
Yeah, and that's a good point because there's certainly a trend of some cyclists doing more gravel riding. We did on Sunday, in addition to the downtown tour, we offered a gravel ride as a Sunday option. We're sort of thinking about the idea of trying to make a gravel route part of the Saturday venue so that we can make better use of our whole Saturday setup, which includes lunch and all that, and have basically a road ride and a gravel ride both on Saturday. We're going to see if we can arrange that. But yeah, that's a good point, and we want to try to include that group of cyclists in the people who want to sign up for our event.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Is your packet pickup on Saturday for participants?
It's always on the day of the event, but most people come and pick them up usually the day before, and we have had various places where packet pickup went on. It was the Trek store in Mount Pleasant or a brewery, and you know, so we see who's willing to do that. But typically there's a packet pickup ahead of the day, and then for people who are arriving essentially at the last minute, they can pick up their packets right before the ride start.
Do you set up any hotel blocks for out-of-town travelers?
We have not. We have been asked, where should I stay? And so we've recommended some of the hotels that are really the closest to Awandaw, which typically be in sort of the Seaside Farms area. But we saw in the application, this is our first go-around, that there's a list of hotels that you've asked us to make sure are made known to all of the participants, and we'll certainly do that.
And do you have, do they fill out a questionnaire or anything, any kind of survey at the end, survey at the end of the event that talks about like where they stayed or what they did or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. We had survey data, which much of it is included in our application that was collected by Darren. And we have a lot of data on how many people were outside the 50-mile radius and where they stayed, how many nights they stayed, did they have other hangers on that they brought with them. So we have quite a bit of that information.
Oh, sorry. That's okay. So it's 41 outside.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you so much for your time.
We thanks for your attention.
Alrighty, so for our next presenter, Cooper River Bridge Run. Thank you again.
Good morning. I'm Irv Batten. I am the race director for the Cooper River Bridge Run. And first of all, I'd like to thank the committee and the town for being such a great support team to the bridge run. This will be the 47th year of the bridge run, and we're very proud of the fact that even through the pandemic, that we kept our ranking as the third largest 10K in the U.S. and the eighth largest 10K in the world. And right now, our registration is a little over 9,000, which is 2,000 more than last year at this time, which projects us to be right at pre-pandemic registration count. So we're super excited about that. If there's any other questions, I think everybody knows the bridge run, so. Nope.
I don't have any.
We're good. Thanks again.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. And Holy City Arts and Lyric Opera.
Did I take it out?
Oh, we took that. No. Got it. Mount Pleasant Symphony.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Tyler Rall, the president of Mount Pleasant Symphony. I'm here this morning with Ron Medola, our music director. And I always take this opportunity to thank the committee for their generous support over the years. We became the Mount Pleasant Symphony in 2020 and have received funding from this committee since 2018. So I wanted to thank you for that support. It's enabled us to keep our programming going, and I wanted to share the one thing that I have appreciated about this group over the years is that it allows amateur musicians like myself to perform alongside local professionals, and also our professional conductor, Ron Medola, who's been with us 7 or 8 years. It's getting up there.
Yeah, it is getting up there.
And so that's something I've really appreciated about this group. And we are a 50-member, a full orchestra, and our organization has been around since 1995. So we're going on 28 years performing together. And we have musicians from all over Somerville, North Charleston, Tri-County area that come into Mount Pleasant on a weekly basis. We rehearse at Encore Theater. And we are currently open to a larger venue. We've been performing at Christ Church for several years and have looked at Seacoast Church as well as Lucy Beckham High School as a performance venue, because we would like a larger venue. And I'd like Ron to share a little about programming, and that would be it.
Good morning. I feel like we should get coffee afterwards. We've seen you so many times, and thank you for your support in the past. We have 4 concerts planned for this season. We start with Greatest Operas of All Time. We have 2 wonderful guest vocalists coming in. That is October 8th, coming up really soon. Then our Low Country Christmas and in December. And then in March, we have a concert basically in tribute to the greatest teacher of all time, Nadia Boulanger, who no one has ever heard of. She taught in Paris and taught everybody from Bernstein to Aaron Copland to Burt Bacharach, of all people. Just an incredible teacher. And then the final concert in May will be Irish music. And we're looking forward to that when I'm doing some orchestrations of some of the great Irish folk songs, etc. We'd like to expand. We'd like to be at Lucy Beckham School. We can't afford Lucy Beckham School. We have of late, and this is why Tyler's asked for a little more money, hired a professional person to handle our internet, our website, and to do more outreach. We've also spoken to a fundraiser, and we've contracted with her just recently to actually go after more and more sponsorship, which we need desperately. Our costs are going up. We're finding that the Encore Theater is now costing us more, and sometimes it's not even available. So we are turning to you for the same level of support with a little bit of a kick upward, and we're hoping that you guys can see clear to do that. And I know you have so many worthy, needed groups or groups that really serve this community. But I'd like to remind you, we serve roughly 350 people in the audience, plus the orchestra members themselves get to participate. We're finding that as more and more people move to Charleston and Mount Pleasant, we're getting calls now. So the orchestra is starting to get larger and more competent as well. That's about all I have to say. If you guys have any questions, we're open to answering them.
So, John, this funding cycle is just for the March and May, right?
This funding cycle is for January through June.
There are two events because they have four, but two of them are in this cycle.
Correct.
So I don't see the application in our packets. Was that?
The application
for the spring, and summer concerts.
It is in the online link, but it's not in our booklets.
If there was a print mistake versus the digital mistake, or a digital print versus the physical print. No fault of the organization, but if there's a putting it in the physical binder, I'll make sure that that's sent to y'all after the meeting.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Good.
Got a question for you. The and I know this is largely a local attendance, but not entirely. But I also know that people do travel for good music, and people do travel to Mount Pleasant for good anything. I just wonder what efforts or what you know, types of promotion you're doing, whether it's social media or something else, or connections with sister symphonies to try to get the word out beyond our borders.
Well, sister symphonies are all scrambling on their own, and we haven't really coordinated anything with them. Our philosophy has been, and this is one that with our own internal board, we've had this conversation for years, that we are free and open to the public for all our concerts because we're trying to keep this music alive. I produce pre-concert videos. I do detailed scripts that make it possible to do outreach to the audience that brings us an audience that is a very wide demographic, young parents and their kids, and to basically learn about classical music, and pop music as well. For instance, Tony Bennett just passed, and so I've done an orchestration of If I Ruled the World, which will be the closer for the concert, and we have these two great singers to sing it, the Celine Dion and Tony Bennett version, in essence. So we're doing what we can within our own philosophical bent to have this be free. So consequently, tracking is a difficult thing for us. We're just getting into some of the latest internet capable tracking capacity for us to do that with this fundraiser, so that we can issue tickets via the net, but they're free. It's not going to help us in terms of counting necessarily, because people are still going to show up from Frankie at Seaside to whatever at the last minute, you know, but that'll help.
So I apologize. I'm asking a question that I know would be in print, but I don't have it here. What is the attendance of each concert?
Roughly 350. A Christmas concert is a packed house of 400, 450 people. And it hasn't slacked off. Obviously, COVID, you know, took us down. But when we came back very strong. It's a lousy venue, a wonderful church, and they host us for free, but people can't see the whole orchestra because they're down on floor level, and that's always been our drawback, you know.
And what would the attendance capacity be at Lucy Beckham?
I was thinking like 550.
I think it was like 550. We actually toured the space. It's a solid space. It isn't ideal, but it's certainly better than where we are right now. But it would cost us roughly $2,000 per concert. And we're currently spending well over $60,000 during the course of the season. And we ended up slightly in the red, and we actually had to make that up out of our own pockets. Some of the people that sponsor the orchestra that play in the orchestra anteed up to get us to break even.
Just one other follow-up with the sister symphonies, and I don't know where they exist. I assume the larger
Somerville, North Charleston Pops, obviously the Charleston Symphony. Some of their players play with us as well.
How about Columbia and Greenville or Charlotte, those areas?
Oh, boy, that's
the only reason I ask is one of our applicants here, South Carolina Surf, those tournaments, and I know they have reciprocal agreements with other clubs, so that they say, you know, we will support your tournament, you support ours, and together they kind of share that solid interest in the same thing. It just might be an idea.
That's a good idea, and it's something I'll follow up on, Terry. I'll see if I can figure out a way for us to do that. There is a group called the American Symphony Orchestra League, and we coordinate to a degree with them, but that's national, and it doesn't really get into the nitty-gritty. As you'll find, if you get into the arts, you're always in a deficit, and you're always looking for a way just to draw audience. Well, we figured out the audience, but we're still at break-even, which is where we should be. In other words, for instance, the town of Mount Pleasant is now going to build what I would term a coffee house theater, a very small stage theater down the line. Well, Somerville and the North Charleston Pops do outreach events with chamber groups, in other words, string quartets, piano quintets, etc. We can get into that, but we have to hire pros to a degree to do that. In other words, within the orchestra, we have decent amateurs, some of them very outstanding, but not a complete complement to do that kind of concert. So that would cost us more money, but we're looking to do that ultimately. But that theater is probably beyond my shelf life as a conductor. I'm 72 at this point, so you know that's where that is.
How big is the orchestra?
Roughly 45 to 50 full-time, and then we hire extras beyond that to handle the complement, plus guest soloists.
Any questions? Any other?
I've got one question. So Lucy Beckham's, the date's been available, but the funding has not been available? Is that...
Dates is not something we've actually gotten into. In other words, they have their own schedule, like most high schools, and that, John, formula for us prior to finding Christchurch was not a winning formula. In other words, something always comes up. There's a beauty contest, there's a pep rally, there's whatever, and suddenly you don't have a dress rehearsal, which is where you work out all your technical issues. So that's been a real challenge for us. Lucy Beckham is open to it. They've got a professional theater manager there who was a very competent young woman from our conversations when we toured the space. Bottom line is that we don't know about their schedule at this point, simply because the dollars ruled us out from the get-go. That's $10,000 added to our budget, and you know we can't get to that point right now.
Does Wando not have a facility that's...
When we looked into that, it was availability issues.
That's right. A very busy schedule.
Wanda's extremely booked up. We the town gave CCSD $600,000 for assisting the build of the Wando building. We haven't recouped that money yet in event usage for sure.
So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Okay, our next presenter is Rice Planters Golf.
Good morning. My name is Bruce Fleming. I'm the tournament director for the Rice Planters. I've been doing it for 18 years now. you all have been very gracious to support us over the past few years when we've requested, and thank you again for listening. History of the Rice Planters, we will be 52 years in 2024. 50 years were held at Snee Farm. We had 1 year that we moved over to Rivertown only because of agronomic issues at Snee Farm 1 year with the green. So instead of canceling the event, we decided to move to Rivertown, which is a sister club to River to Snee Farm. Through the pandemic, we never canceled our event. We were in 2020 the first ever amateur golf event held after COVID. So we had a lot of challenges that we had to work through and such. And so I'm quite proud that we've never had to cancel the Rice Planters. Our champions through those years, over 160 professional victories on the PGA Champions Corn Ferry Tour. I can't count around the world how many some of our champions have won. There are a handful of kids from Australia who've won that I've kind of lost touch with. That 160 is kind of a very small number, and what I think is probably more like about 230 or 240 champions around the world. Biggest thing is we've got 12 major champions on our books. So Brooks Koepka, 2009 champion, just won the 2023 PGA this year in a bit of a career resurgence.
Names like Tom Lehman won 1982 in Mount Pleasant, won the 1996 British Open. Stuart Sink won the 1993 Rice Planters, won the 2009 British. Alan Doyle, a senior player, won us in 1988, 1990, 1994, and won four majors on the senior tour. And then our charming person, and our guess the person we hang our hat on most, Brooks Koepka, 2009 champion, and he's won five majors in his career. So in past years, we've used previous ETAC funding for marketing, specifically Mount Pleasant to a worldwide audience. That's our website, our internships that we've developed over the past 10 years. We've had College of Charleston students, we've had Clemson students, we've had semi-professional social media influencers, as they call themselves, to help us out. we are going to spend a little bit more money this year kind of ramping up our website piece as well as our on-site tournament scoreboard. The goal is to bring in one of those big PGA Tour digital scoreboards, which will help us kind of move the event up a little bit. we do give any kind of tournament, you know, profit to local charities, Folds of Honor, which is a big golf national run by the U.S. Air Force, Lieutenant Dan Rooney, providing scholarships for children of servicemen and servicewomen who've lost their lives, as well as the South Carolina Junior Golf Foundation based in Columbia. That's a big connection for us. Most of our players are coming from out of the state. We got about two or three players that are going to be local. Then we're probably about 70 to 75 players are going to be out of state, international. We have a really good connection to the World Amateur Golf Ranking, which is based in St. Andrews, Scotland. That tends to be our connection. And then we have about 300 or 400 college golf coaches on our list that we interact with to find the players that we need. We'll have probably 350 to 400 players apply, and then we'll select 72 to 75 of those players to compete. So these young individuals that get to play these high-ranking amateur events have a veritable tour that they go all summer. They go from us to Pinehurst. Previous to us, they come from Atlanta. They're in New York. They're in Pittsburgh. It's quite an interesting tour that these young kids get to play. So thank you.
Bruce, I've got a question. Your application indicates that in the type of entity, it indicated as a government entity. Is that
may have been a typo. Yeah, we're not a 501c3 anymore. That ended when Sneed Farm was purchased by the current owner in 2003. They took the 501c3 entity away from the Rice Planters and embedded it within the golf course.
We see the one host hotel. Do you guys send out a link of or a list of hotels for everyone else attending?
We partner specifically with Comfort Inn and Hungry Neck. We've partnered with them for 10 years. We do a nice little sponsorship trade deal. They take care of housing for our rules officials. We bring about 8 rules officials in, cost us nothing to the housing, but does cost me about $3,500 in terms of transportation, per diem and such. And we direct everybody to that hotel. We do a small block. The young individuals are playing are 18 to 22. They're a little hard to kind of convince that they should go to a hotel. Mostly they're traveling with mom and dad. Those tend to be the ones that will be going into the hotels, but the other ones are coming with teammates. They may have friends who play at the College of Charleston, or they may have friends at Clemson who've got friends down here. They tend to house up. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a challenge to get them kind of at across-the-board hotels, but we do keep them specifically pointing direct to the Comfort Inn. There's a link on our website, and we set up a block of rooms for them to get a discount there.
So I just want to go back to Terry's question. So you're no longer a 501c3. You're not a government organization. So where does that put you?
So we're embedded within a private golf club. So we use players' fees specifically to fund the event and then sponsorship and then ask for support on top of that.
So but the private golf club isn't not a nonprofit?
No, it would be owned by a private entity.
Are you a separate division?
No. Mm-mm. No. We're all just member volunteers.
Any questions?
Great. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
South Carolina Surf Soccer Club.
Fun fact, the planning for this building started in 2013. They started construction in 2015, and they had the grand opening in August of 2017. And this was originally a school that actually I attended elementary school for that closed in the early 90s. So, and there's a quote, according to Life 5 News, it was built for 75 years.
Yeah, I can share. I'm sorry.
According, that's my Google research line of way. So. Fun facts.
You have to say it loud. Did you catch that?
Yes. Okay. Went to school here. Yep.
There's a plaque downstairs. Oh, perfect.
Was that right? Or? Yeah. Okay.
Good. You got A+.
I want to have credibility before I speak. Good morning. My name is Trip Moy, and I'm a volunteer board member and serve on the South Carolina Surf Soccer Tournament Committee. I also want to sincerely thank each of you for your time today and the dedication to the town of Mount Pleasant. Our nonprofit soccer club, Mount Pleasant Soccer Booster Club, originated in 1981 and has had a long-standing relationship with the town of Mount Pleasant. In fact, I grew up playing in this soccer club and have many fond memories from my own tournament days. I'm here to sincerely thank you for your continued partnership and kindly ask the ATAX committee to please consider our request for our two tournaments this spring, February and March of 2024. Typically, our March tournament is our largest tournament. Last year, we had over 170 teams competing. As we've expressed previously at these committee meetings, we work closely with Kathleen Garland, Executive Director of the Charleston Area Sports Commission, and the Town of Mount Pleasant to ensure we're not hosting tournaments on already busy weekends. In fact, just last year, we rescheduled our long-standing February tournament to do a prior weekend so we wouldn't be competing with Seaweed. This year, this summer, after meeting with town officials and hotel owners, we decided to reschedule our upcoming October tournament to the weekend of 9/29 through October 1st so we wouldn't compete with Darius Rucker's Riverfront Festival or the Charleston Home Battery Game. As the information I just provided, that's based on Kathleen, her office, how they calculate the economic impact. She's been very, very helpful as we try to analyze the data to help support really what our economic impact is to the town of Mount Pleasant. This coming, as I mentioned, we just hosted our fall tournament, which y'all supported at this time, I think it was last April or May, this past weekend. According to a couple of hotel owners, occupancy was very, very strong. And I would assume that most hotel lobbies were filled with soccer players each morning. In fact, in 2 weeks, we'll be hosting our second tournament of our season. And I called around five hotels this morning before this meeting. Hilton Garden Inn, no availability. Cambria Hotel, no availability. Hyatt Place Town Center, no availability. Spring Hill Suites by Marriott, limited availability. As I mentioned earlier, we host four tournaments, two in the fall, two in the spring. I'm here today to request for the spring tournaments. As I think Terry alluded to, we have maintained for over 30 years very strategic partnerships across the Southeast where we do reciprocal agreements. And so those are all from all over several states. But the information in front of you today just gives you a little impact or a little bit of history of the last seven tournaments that we've hosted over the last 2 years. 826 teams were hosted, and we played over 3,000 soccer games. 460 visiting teams, again, 50 miles away, that attributed to about 6,200 visitors. We've also provided an opportunity of 366 teams and approximately 4,700 players to play organized competitive soccer locally. We feel hosting these tournaments is a huge win for the community, businesses in Mount Pleasant, and the families and players all involved. As you can see from the data provided, our last seven tournaments have had an economic impact over $6 million and have generated an estimated $360,000 in local taxes. Again, I want to thank you for your time and consideration today.
What were the dates for your March tournament?
The coming March tournament?
Mm-hmm.
It is the second weekend. Jared, officially is
16th and 17th. And the February week is the 8th and 10th, the weekend before CU.
Got those dates. And when you called to ask about availability, were you asking for the February, the March, or both?
I was just giving, I was calling for the, in the 2 weeks just to give you a little bit of snapshot of what it, what these tournaments do from an economic impact.
Well, he was saying this year he called.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks from now, there's another tournament for the fall one. That's great.
Oh.
Yeah. So right now, you know, if you're for the February, March tournaments 2024, you know, there's reservations are starting to happen. You know, we've obviously started working with hotel owners to block rooms off, but a lot of that stuff probably won't really happen until December, January, February. Because a lot of the soccer season scheduled didn't really occur, won't come out for the spring until January.
And the March dates were missing from the packet. That's why we were asking.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Important piece.
Any questions?
All right, thank you very much.
I've got one question. Oh. I'm sorry. So did I miss, are you coordinating with hotels with links? Is that on your tournaments? Are you listing the links on the site?
Yeah, so we work with hotel coordinator that tries to identify which hotels want to support and work with us on room rates and availability. One of the hardest things that, you know, Charleston hotel owners sometimes struggle with is giving up so much availability that far out for these tournaments. But as I've mentioned, we've have hosted these tournaments for over 30 years. We have a long-standing relationship of consistently making sure our customers show up and support. The tournament we had 2 weeks ago, every game was played in Mount Pleasant, and look to continue that and keep more and more of our hotel rooms here. It's really, really hard to track where all the time where people always end up staying. I mean, we try to promote it. We try to recommend hotels. We provide the links. We do get some of that feedback, but a lot of times people kind of do whatever's most convenient. A lot of these game schedules don't come out from a time perspective until the week of. And so sometimes, you know, people change hotels based on proximity to where they're playing.
And when it comes to when you're moving dates, Do you know the occupancy rate was before moving? Like you had moved some dates to like on the seaweed thing when you moved it to the weekend before. What was the occupancy rate? Maybe Jennifer knows something like that. What's the typical occupancy rate on that weekend beforehand?
You know, I don't know the answer. It's one of the things that'd be interesting to I'll follow up with Kathleen and ask her if she has that data. I know the big thing too is our February tournament had always kind of been that second weekend in February, and you know, sometimes it was on seaweed weekend, sometimes it wasn't, just depending. And so we made a conscious effort going forward, we will always try to be the weekend before seaweed. Not only was it really challenging to get availability from hotel rooms in general, I mean, we're typically bringing in, you know, 80 to 150 teams and typically need 1,000 to 1,500 hotel rooms when we host these tournaments. But the price, the ADR was just really, really high on seaweed weekends, really, really high with Darius Rucker Festival. And so we're trying to do our part to try to not only help hotel owners and businesses provide another weekend that would be busy for them, but also help our players and their families have a more economic trip to Charleston. Sometimes very hard to do.
Thank you.
Chip, thanks so much.
All right, thank you all for your time.
Have a good day. Southeastern Wildlife. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for the plug there, too, before I got up. That's great. My name is John Powell. I'm the president of Southeastern Wildlife Exposition. I'll try to keep it short, maybe not as short as Herb, but we're entering our 42nd year, and it'll look much like Seaweeds of the Past. We have five different venues downtown Charleston. We're welcoming special guests like Jeff Corwin and Julie Scardina. We'll have close to 400 exhibitors and artists. And hopefully somewhere between 40 and 45,000 attendees. That last little bit above 40 is typically weather dependent. We have special events around downtown as well as three here with conservation partners in Mount Pleasant. Mount Pleasant's been a very consistent partner over many years. One of our proudest achievements over the last four or five in the public art world is the public sculpture we have at Waterfront Park. The fourth piece, which is now permanent, of last year, which is the terrapin. It's an important mission of our board to make that final piece permanent, which I think will happen over the next year. And again, that couldn't happen without your support. Our challenges and our successes over the last couple of years, it's funny, mirror everyone else in this room. I think events small and large have the same, and probably 90% of your questions also are applicable to CWE. So it's interesting to be up here and listen and understand we all share the same challenges, especially when it comes to hotel rooms and tracking and that sort of thing. And something we've talked about in this room before, you know, how we can maybe do better at that. But I want to thank you for your continued support. You've been a great partner over the years.
Thank you. Any questions? I do. I have a quick question. So you had on here that 5% of your events are in Mount Pleasant, and I know that over the years you've kind of expanded a little bit into the Mount Pleasant area. As you're moving forward and growing, do we have venues here in Mount Pleasant that you can use?
I think the short answer is yes. You know, we're all these big events are a little different. You know, we cater to the masses, and we have this unique ticketing system where an individual ticket holder goes in and out. And so the challenges with Mount Pleasant are really transportation and what are those spaces that are big enough to make a site big enough to offset, you know, any increase in sales, or then are we going to have to cap ticket sales, which maybe in our future anyway, which is sort of we don't ever want to do that, right? We want to keep filling hotels. And so if there's ever a place to spread out, you know, Mount Pleasant's certainly an attractive one. I've said it before, you know, I'd work with the town and Parks Department, anybody else to help us find the path to do that.
Okay. Any questions? No. Well, that was quick. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chairwoman, I have one thing, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
To get off my soapbox here at some point, but I do want to mention while everybody's in the room with Jennifer Maxwell, she started to do, hospitality council. So the mission of that is to help fill rooms on those off weekends and those off nights. So, and also get some employees over to Mount Pleasant as well. But that is something that we're going to be looking forward to, and the Chamber's kind of heading that up. And I thank Jennifer for doing that, and the Chamber for Mount Pleasant Chamber for doing that. It's a really big deal. So we will be, and as a council member, if there's anything that we can ever do in the town to help you and get those empty rooms filled, I'll be here for you. All right. Thank you.
I believe Rick might have left to use the restrooms. We want to wait for him to come back real quick. We can continue. We do have a quorum that's true, so we can continue.
Okay. So, well, we've not heard from the last two presenters before, so maybe we should wait for just a minute or two till he comes back.
As a chairwoman, if you wish to wait, you can
certainly do that. Yeah, I think just because we've never, that way they have the benefit of everyone. So we are ready to listen to STAC House Shows. The representative, thank you.
Well, good morning, y'all. Thanks morning. For having us. This has been fun. I know what I'm going to do with my family for the rest of the year. So this has been wonderful. Stacked House Shows, I'll tell you a little bit about who we are. We have a deep belief, and we started because we have this belief that a one-of-a-kind, beautiful setting with a one-of-a-kind, nationally recognized singer, songwriter, performer create a truly singular experience for both the audience and for the artist. So Stackhouse Shows was birthed 9 years ago when we moved to Charleston. My wife's from Charleston. I'm going to perpetually be from off. That's fine, even though it's Columbia. But we were looking for songwriter rooms in the area. And there's lots of great places that we've played, from downtown to North Charleston to Isle of Palms and Mount Pleasant. But there were no great songwriter rooms, 200, 250 seat rooms that really focused on showcasing songwriters and that intimate exchange between songwriters and audiences. So we said, let's build our own. So starting about 9 years ago off of Highway 41 at the Old Brick Church of St. Thomas and St. Denis, we started hosting these songwriter shows. And we started with our friends, the Blue Dogs, and we grew it to Grammy-nominated, Grammy-winning artists like John Paul White from the Civil Wars, Edwin McCain, Mark Broussard, Will Hogue, and every artist without exception that came have played venues as impressive as the O2 Arena in London and the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville. Every single one of them came out of the experience and said, we've never had anything like this, because of how beautiful it was, how intimate it was, how historic it was. And we watched that impact the artist, and then we watched that impact the audience. And so the response has been wonderful. It was featured in the Post and Courier, wrote an article about it. On Doll Green has been our production arm throughout the history of the event. And the response has been significant. So fast forward to a couple years ago, Axis TV caught wind of what we were doing and asked if they could feature us in an episode of a series that they were doing about unique venues throughout the U.S. And so they featured us on an episode. It became the lead episode of that series, and it was nominated for an Emmy. We lost to Netflix, we like to say, because they bought the room, but we're not bitter. Through that, it featured our friends in Ranky Tanky. It focused a lot on what makes this part of the world have a continual cultural impact throughout the United States, the gullet culture, the music that came up from it that has impacted us and songwriting throughout the years. So the reception was so good that the same production crew has approached us and said, what if we created a TV series, a limited run, 6 episodes, that would feature these locations throughout Mount Pleasant and Charleston, and show this experience of an artist having to interact with the history and the culture and the beauty of the place, and then a different venue, not a large light show, but something intimate and small, and how that impacts the artist and the audience and creates something special. The timing of this is good with the writer's strike, the actual people that we have in place at the content distributors. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Right now with the writer's strike, they're looking for content. And so this is not a scripted show. It's interview-based and performance-based. So we have a good time in the world. Impact and viewership, I know that's important. That's why we're here. The actual events are small by design. 200 people cap rooms is what we're looking for. But the partners that are ready and looking for this pilot episode are Apple TV, Prime Video, and Axis TV. The smallest of those three has 50 million subscribers and a reach throughout North America and worldwide. So it's something that we believe can showcase what's special about Mount Pleasant, about Charleston, and the places that you've passed all of your life and gone, I never knew that was here. And that's what we want to capture, those events, those moments. And yeah, so that's why we're here. Thanks for having us.
I have a couple of questions.
Yeah. First, I don't know how many answers I've got, but here we are.
First is the type of entity is marked as government as opposed to 501c. Didn't know if that was just a typo, if you're somewhere than a 501c.
Yeah, so we started St. Thomas's Anglican Church, which is where the STACK abbreviation came from, which is on Long Point Road right off of, right across from Seacoast. That's where we birthed. That's kind of where the vision started. So we were a part of that, and we just spun out into our own LLC. So we're not a 501c3, but we still partner with St. Thomas's Anglican Church.
So you're not a nonprofit?
No, sir, we are not.
Okay.
And I've got a second question as
yes,
well.
Sir.
And that is kind of how do you measure the impact,
yeah.
the tourism impact? I kind of think about this series and what you're doing. You know, if you look at it from a food standpoint, you've got
right.
diners, drive-ins, and dives, and
right.
guys all over the place. And when it comes to your town, it highlights your deal. You know, people tend to travel there for that. Is that kind of what you're envisioning?
Yes, sir. That is certainly the goal, and it really is. You know, I've walked a lot of miles in the Cooper River Bridge Run while I've watched people run faster than me. So it's a very tangible, you know. You could see all the people. With this, it's a little bit more nebulous. We had a conference call yesterday with our agent that's working with Amazon Prime on this, and it's hard to get a static number of viewership. So they do it based on subscribers, and the number of eyeballs that are going to be on it is really, it's an evolving metric that they're still trying to figure out. The answer is millions and millions of opportunities for people to put eyeballs on something that hopefully they go, that's a part of Mount Pleasant that we've never seen before. Let's go back and experience that. So that's the goal.
I don't know if I missed this, but for the 6 episodes, you said you're going to film in 6 different places. What are those places?
So the pilot episode we know is going to be in downtown at the Aiken Rett House. But we know that one of the immediate first episodes we will film after that is back at the Old Brick Church in Kinghorn. And I sent to John the link to the episode that Access did featuring the Old Brick Church for y'all to view kind of at your own time.
So would there be other Mount Pleasant locations?
There would be. We haven't determined all okay. 6, but if you guys say we're partnering, that okay. certainly would be one of our main focuses, because there is an opportunity to showcase so many of these historic spaces that people maybe haven't seen before in a light that they haven't been seen in.
Any questions? John?
Oh, I see. Yeah. So the budget shows $36,000, and then the application here shows $24,750.
That's primarily based on production cost for getting the pilot episode done and edited, crew to the area to film, because that's our immediate need that we have. Mm-hmm.
For crew, would they be using hotel rooms?
Yes, ma'am. They would be. They would be.
If you were going to just give us an idea, how many days would they be in the area and how many?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Would you estimate?
So estimated each shoot, each episode would require 3 days before the event and at least 1 day after. So a total of 4 or 5 days, and a crew of 10 to 20, depending on the shoot, that would come in that would need hotel rooms and accommodations and restaurant recommendations.
Okay. And have you identified the 6 locations you were thinking of doing, have you identified what the other ones would be? Like, do you have like a rough idea of what ones you would be promoting?
So we're still working through that part of it. Herb Frazier, who's a historian, and Charleston Herb's a partner with us in this. He handles all of the history side of it. He kind of takes the artist through the historical experience. And so we lean on Herb a lot to help us identify.
Okay.
Culturally significant places that we can handle with care.
Okay, I think, do you have questions, Bobby? No? No questions?
Thank you. Thanks
for
having us.
Thank you so much for your time. Good luck with everything.
Thanks.
Okay, now we're looking for the presenters for Somerville Juneteenth.
And for this organization, I want to note that on the evaluation form, the IRS form 501c3 from them, they did submit it after print, and those should be given to you as supplemental documents this morning.
Okay, so you have it. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you want to just pass them all over, we'll...
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're delighted that you're having us to share. Somerville Juneteenth is relatively new. We work with the Alston Heritage Foundation and other organizations and other historians. I hate to piggyback off of Herb Frazier. We also work with him and other historians in the area. We have started with the Alston Heritage Foundation with placing a historic marker downtown Somerville for the Alston School. And as you know, a lot of the older schools, like at the Kane Hoy School, they have museums, they have markers. Well, what we've done, starting with the historic marker in the year 2000, we've planned several cultural events, including Juneteenth, Kwanzaa on ice, et cetera, et cetera. But lately, in each community, there has been many people coming into the International Charleston Museum. And we'd like them to know that on their way to the museum or when their way to coming into the Low Country, that there are other areas of interest to come to, like Mount Pleasant. We propose a tourism guide for those coming in. We have those coming in from church conventions, the sorority and fraternity conventions, business conventions, sports, church, it just goes on. So we would like them to have a brochure to know of the lodging areas, hotels, Airbnbs in the area when they come. Now, if they come to the Charleston International Museum, they may see a sweetgrass basket display. But when they come to Mount Pleasant, they can actually speak to those who are making the sweetgrass baskets along Highway 17. So we would want them to know that Mount Pleasant is very rich in culture, and you can have a hands-on experience as opposed to looking at a museum display. We have a lot of, the brochure will start off with history. I told you we work with Damon Fordham, Herb Frazier. We'll have the leadership of Mount Pleasant in the tourist brochure, tourist attractions, eateries, especially eateries that have a special accommodation for veterans, special needs, the elderly, because sometimes if you're traveling, we have a lot of family reunions coming in from the historic African-American communities, Kane Hoy, Snowden. If someone has a special needs person, a relative, they might want to leave them home, but they're maybe places in Mount Pleasant. So we want to highlight those eateries, lodging places, the festivals and special events. Juneteenth is a big one, and there is a Juneteenth, several Juneteenth celebrations here in Mount Pleasant. My mother here, she's a pandemic artist, and she's the president of Somerville Juneteenth. I'm the treasurer, and she's had her art displayed at several town halls. In North Charleston, the town of Lincolnville, New York City, all different places. And she's a pandemic artist. I'm going to let her share. But during Juneteenth, her art was displayed. And when we were at Lincolnville, people coming in from Texas, because they know the history of Lincolnville, and they wanted to know, where are all the Juneteenths in the Low Country? So that's some of the things we're going to highlight in the tourism brochure. There are streets, there are schools named after African Americans. We like to highlight that as well. Historic churches, the outdoors, African American fishermen That was how they made their money. So there's a lot of fishing areas, a lot of lakes. There's a lot of places for people to come to. Who are the historic African Americans? What are the newspapers here in Mount Pleasant that can direct you to different places? And of course, there'll be a calendar. And I'm going to let you speak with Ms. Saylor. I'm Linda Saylor Marchant. I'm the treasurer. And I started out as a librarian for 35 years in New York, Charleston, and Georgia. Live Oak Public Libraries in Savannah, Georgia, Savannah State University, Queens Library in New York, Charleston County Library here. And I noticed there was a need for tourism brochures highlighting those groups coming in, the Gullah Geechee Carter. They're planning several trips to the Lowcountry. So we want to attract those groups coming in and let them know Mount Pleasant has a beautiful place. There are beautiful places to stay at, places to eat at, festivals, etc. They plan their family reunions now to come down, and we want to get the information out online via mail. And distribution. We have a lot of teachers in this area that bring their families to the summer, so we're going to get the word out. This is Ms. Saylor, and she's a pandemic artist, and she's going to share because we like to highlight our artists, African American artists, in the brochure.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
It's good to see all of you here this morning. I am Possibility, the oldest one here. You look at me, maybe you can't detect it, but I grew up in South Carolina and moved to New York and traveled around several places in our world, and a lot happened then, but I'm not going to prolong here because time is going by, and a lot of people spoke. But this is a school. I was happy to hear about the building of this this place. And in school, I learned a lot. And, you know, from being a social worker, I've had many other jobs. And one of the jobs I had, I was working and plastics here, as you see. This dark plastic here was making Hot Wheels. Some of the men here
do you know about that. Do you want to raise
Wheels.
That so people can see?
I was working for the local Hot Wheels place, and they, the Hot Wheels company was making all the cookies that you eat, and some of those cookies you still eat, they made them. They had the plastic, throwing it out in the garbage. And your speaker here was a young lady, a young girl, about 5 or 6, and she was looking at television, and the announcer said, Kennedy was shot in Texas, and my husband saw Robert Kennedy going to California. He was killed 12 o'clock that night. Martin Luther King was shot, and then Malcolm X, his own people, shot him. I kept this plastic here because they were throwing it out in the garbage, and I kept it and rolled it into what you see on here. And when the pandemic came, my mother lived to be 97. That was a Spanish pandemic. Not too many people died because, you know, they sort of had sort of bright doctors and they kept them living. But here, the pandemic, a lot of people died. In South Carolina, when I was reading it, you know, they didn't give us the definite number, but you know, thousands of people was dying with this pandemic.
Right.
And in Brooklyn, New York, 500 people died. And our president says, and five lines of people on the outside line up to get help pieces. You can't come here. In California, 600 people die. So I took this plastic that I kept because of the pandemic. The pandemic was going, and they didn't have no cure for it. So Low Country Quarterly Arts Grant contact us, and she said to me, look, can you make a pandemic art picture? So I took the picture from the president and his brother, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King died. They were, you know, making peace for all over the U.S. But I says, the plain old people were dying from the pandemic, and they didn't know why they were dying. So I took that artwork, plastic art that I had, and I put it on the flag of the U.S. first, because I was familiar with that. I put that on the Low Country Art Quarterly Art Grant with the U.S. flag. And I said, educators, doctors, and health facilities will do their best to end the pandemic. But I think we still have it. And here, all over the country.
I'm sorry, we do want to keep it fair to all the speakers.
But we do want to thank you for doing that.
Okay, so the funding we requested would be about 200 brochures and 40 pages at color. All right, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Sorry for the lengthy presentation.
We learned a lot. Where's my pencil? Okay. So I'd like to take this moment to see if anyone here had any more questions. And does the panel have any questions?
I have a question, ma'am. So the request for funding is for the brochures?
Yes.
The total request of $20,000 is for 200 brochures of 40.
It's
2,000.
Yeah.
2,040 page color brochures.
It's 40 page, and out of that 40 pages, I guess 30 pages would be color, and it'll be 200. But we have private funding. We use
200 or 2,000, sorry.
It'll be probably 200 to 250.
Brochures?
Yes.
For $20,000? I'm just...
No, it's the funding request.
I was looking at the wrong page.
I thank you for adding that extra zero. And then if you want to
I was looking at the wrong page.
I can
the
say,
show,
let's, look at let's the say 20,000 copies. But thank you
I
for
was
that.
Confused.
You were so generous.
Yeah. I don't make the decisions. I'm just here to watch over. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, at this point, I'd like to adjourn. Thank you all for coming. Have a terrific day.
Thank you.
And John will be in touch later on.
Thank you.